Welcome to Driving for Bluegrass. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare, and we're taking a deep dive into the world of dedicated logistics and the stories behind the people who make it all happen at Bluegrass Dedicated. I'm excited to welcome Transportation Supervisors Megan Bryant and Joe Paul, here to give us an inside look at their roles, the challenges they navigate, and what sets Bluegrass Dedicated apart in a competitive industry. We will get into the weeds and talk about a typical night for both that you'll surely find interesting. Whether you're a transportation expert, a casual listener, or someone curious about a day in the life of dedicated logistics, this episode has something for you. Here's my conversation with Megan Bryant and Joe Paul. Megan and Joe, welcome to Driving for Bluegrass. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. Joe, how about you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Now, you're in South Carolina, right?
That is correct.
And then Megan and I are here in person together. So let's just get started. Tell us a bit about yourself and your role at Bluegrass Dedicated, how long you've been here, and what your journey has looked like since you've been here. Megan, we'll start with you.
So I've been here 4 or 5 months now. Me and Joe are both the nighttime employees. He's remote. I work in the office. You know, it's real simple. Come into work, do your job, go home. But outside of that, you know, hobby-wise, I hunt, fish outside all the time.
Nice.
I hate being inside. It's not my cup of tea. So
especially at night.
Yeah. It's hard. It's really hard.
So, Joe, tell us a little bit about how long you've been here and your journey here and a little bit about what you all do.
I've been with Bluegrass for coming up on 6.5 years. When I started with Bluegrass, I was driving a switcher truck. In Anderson, South Carolina, for one of our big customers, Plastic Omnium. And then did that for about 4 months. After that, I took on a role taking fuel tanks from Anderson to West Point, Georgia, 5 days a week to the Kia plant. And then we had a driver quit, and I got a spot on our big run going from Anderson to Tuscaloosa and back, going down to the Mercedes plant, taking fuel tanks.
And so, and then that transitioned into a supervisor role with Bluegrass Dedicated, or were you working with Bluegrass at the time, or did you come to the company later on?
Well, I started as a driver, and then after about 2.5 years, because of my background, I was encouraged to apply for the assistant site manager spot here in Anderson.
Awesome.
And so I applied for it and got it. And then eventually the other site manager left, and I took over as site manager here in Anderson. We lost the contract with Plastic Omnium, and so they shut down the Anderson office. And so they started having me work remote from home doing night dispatch.
Fantastic. So, Megan, tell us a little bit about what a night looks like for you. I mean, you're sitting here and you're dispatching drivers and talking mm-hmm. with them. So tell us how that works.
It's honestly pretty slow most nights. Mm-hmm. Realistically, you know, I get in every afternoon, just kind of touch base, you know, with Harvey and see, you know, what's going on. Anything to take note of for the night. And really, you know, I go through emails, and when the phone rings, I answer. Most of the time it's, hey, you know, I got caught up at the shipper, I'm running a little bit behind, mm-hmm. or hey, you know, I got a blowout. I mean, it's very, very basic, but it's very important because, you know, especially when you get blowouts and breakdowns, I mean, you're looking at service failures real quick if you don't act as quick as you can.
Yeah, do you have to, let's say you do have a blowout or a breakdown, is it up to you to contact the customer and say, hey, we've had an issue?
Yes, I always try to. Sometimes it's hard because with some of these brokered loads, it's hard to find that information mm-hmm. when you need it. But I do my best to communicate with the customer and let the team know when they come in, hey, by the way, you know, this guy's running a couple hours behind because of X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But being there for the customer, and Joe, you can talk about this as well. You know, communication is the key with mm-hmm. any organization, and having you all in your role in an overnight position is just as crucial as any other role here, because when those things happen, that information has to be shared.
Yep.
And key communication is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Joe, you have anything to add to that?
No, a lot of times on nights, you're flying blind. Like Megan said, we get breakdowns. We have to arrange for a mechanic to get out there, fix the truck, arrange for payment and all that, communicate with the customers. And like she said, sometimes that information is not readily available, or the information that we do have only gets you to an operator during business hours.
Yeah.
And so we're firing off emails left and right to let our brokers know, let the customer know that, hey, we had a tire blowout. We're going to be delayed 2 hours. This is his best ETA that he can give me at this point.
Fantastic. So I don't know the answer to this question, but during the overnight hours, are there a lot of drivers on the road?
I mean, depends on the night of the week.
Yeah.
Weekends, not so much. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there's quite a few. We probably got upwards of 20, 25 drivers that are rolling through the late hours. A lot of the drivers out of Bowling Green that are heading up to Trenton start around 2:30 in the morning. And we get a lot of questions on that. People needing their pickup numbers, their delivery numbers, trailer numbers that they're supposed to be picking up.
So, Megan, do you and Joe collaborate any during the overnight hours? Y'all talk or
no?
Or y'all have your own group of?
No, we're complete opposite of each other.
Okay.
So we only talk like if we just happen to text each other.
Or if you're on a podcast.
Or if we're on a podcast, yeah. I haven't talked to Joe in probably, 3 weeks, a month maybe? So.
Yeah.
We need to get you two together more often.
Yeah, at night times, it's either Megan on shift or me. Mm-hmm. Very rarely is there another person available during the night times.
I got you. So you both don't work nights together.
No. He works the first half of the week.
I got you.
And then I work the back half, and we swap Wednesdays.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, now I know. I'm glad I asked this question here. So that makes more sense.
Yep.
So you all handle all the drivers for Bluegrass during the overnight hours.
Yes, we do.
And what time does your shift start?
5 p.m.
You go to what?
5 a.m.
Okay, so
yeah,
but you work 4 days a week.
Yeah, and 4 days a week. It's really not bad.
Yeah, like a fireman.
Yeah, I think it's really tough, like on my long weeks, because once I get to Saturday, I'm like, I need a break.
Yeah,
but then we get to work, or I get to work Saturdays from the house, so it makes it a little bit easier. But it's not that bad.
That's all right. All right. So hey, Joe, tell us what makes Bluegrass Dedicated stand out in the transportation industry from your perspective?
They're really family oriented. You have things come up with your family, medical emergencies and whatnot. They bend over backwards to accommodate your needs. We had the tornado hurricane come through last year. It messed up my house pretty bad. I ended up taking a week off because of it. And, from the top down, they were calling me constantly, checking up to see if my family needed anything, offered assistance if needed. They're just very family oriented.
That's awesome. And same question for you.
I second that. I've worked for a lot of transportation companies, and sometimes things come up, and I've been in that situation, not a hurricane, obviously, but I've had to, hey, I need to work from the house. I got something going on, and there's no question they support it, and again, working in this industry as long as I have, I've worked with companies that it's like, okay, get over it. We need you in the office tonight.
So how long have you been in the transportation industry?
Golly, 2011, I started at UPS, and I was really trying to figure things out for myself because I didn't know what I wanted to do.
So you've been 15 years pro.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. It's hard to really comprehend sometimes, but yeah, it's been a while.
That's awesome. Joe, how long have you, I know you've been here, 6 years or so, but was this your first stint in transportation?
No. Prior to this, I did over-the-road long haul stuff for a year and a half.
So you've been behind the wheel before?
Yes, I still have a CDL. I don't cover routes as much anymore. About once a month, I go up to Bowling Green to work out of the office there, and usually when I'm up there, I end up going to rescue drivers that run out of drive time.
Okay.
So I still have a CDL, so I can jump behind the wheel if it gets real bad.
And Megan, were you ever a driver?
I wasn't a driver, but I've been a shifter before. Mm-hmm. I can do it. I'm just not CDL certified.
I got you.
Yeah.
All right. So kind of walk us through a typical night in your role as a transportation supervisor. I mean, we've talked a little bit about it. Sometimes it can be long and boring.
Yeah.
But do you ever have those nights where it's just like there's something going on all the time.
Yeah, there was a couple, it was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was a Wednesday. Uh-huh. And I had over, I think it was 73 calls. I counted. And I was like, why? It was all night.
Was there like weather related or
no,
just different,
it was just
different things?
Just different things. I mean, and some of the phone calls were truly unnecessary, but in, you know, I understand some of these drivers being out late at night. They just want to talk and, you know, I get it, but at the same time, I'm like, dude, like my phone is blowing up with problems right now. You know, I got to get out of here. But overall, like realistically, it's probably like a 90% of the time, there's not a lot going on. 10% of the time, you're going to have those Wednesdays where the phone does not stop ringing.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you know, you're just there. You're the support system. When the phone rings, you handle what needs to be handled and communicate what you need to communicate, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and, you know, any good organization, especially if you're on the front lines, as a driver mm-hmm. is, they're only as good as their support system.
Yep.
And so at least knowing that you all are there probably gives them some peace of mind.
Yeah.
If something does come up, they got a place to go to.
Yeah. I think it's really important because I've worked for companies that don't have that nighttime support.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk in the next day and you're like, why?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a dumpster fire after that. It's hard to recover sometimes.
And dumpster fires are no good. Hey, Joe, why don't you tell us about a typical night in South Carolina?
Like Megan said, sometimes it's hit and miss. There's nights I get upwards of 130, 140 phone calls. My cell line is ringing. My corporate line is ringing. I've got three people on hold. It's just, it's chaos sometimes. It's, working on four breakdowns at one time, trying to coordinate mechanics to get to all these places and keep up with them so you can get them paid properly.
Yeah, and I was going to ask that. I know y'all mentioned that earlier, but I guess when one of the drivers does have a breakdown or has a mechanical issue, they're not the ones calling to get support from, you know, a company to come out and help them change a tire or do mm-hmm. whatever.
No.
That's up to you all.
Yeah.
So
that is correct.
What kind of resources do you all have? Because, I mean, a driver could be maybe anywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming y'all have a database of preferred vendors throughout the region that you can call on.
Yeah. It's I mainly use truckerbreakdown.com
because mm-hmm.
it's very easy to look at a map. My guy's here. This is where these dealers are. But it's important too with the people that we have accounts with, Bridgestone and stuff like that. Like we try to use those accounts when we can. Sometimes that doesn't happen because the guy's literally in the middle of nowhere. You got to do what you got to do. But overall, I think it's pretty easy. I've not really had, too hard of a time getting, you know, tires fixed or whatever the case may be. Typically the wait time is the worst thing.
Yeah.
Once you call and say, hey, this is what I got. Okay, you know, ETA 90 minutes, that's typically two and a half hours.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but because they'll get there in 90 minutes, and then they've got another 90 minutes of doing whatever they need to do. Is that the same experience for you, Joe?
Yeah, and I always keep a notebook here at my desk, and I keep track of the ones that really move quick for us, and those are the ones I reach out to. Even if I have to have them travel a little bit further than what the other ones are, I'll call them because I know that they're going to be a 60-minute response as opposed to 4 hours.
Okay.
There's times we call – I had a breakdown the other night, and I called 29 different vendors to repair a tire before I finally got somebody, and they had to travel 62 miles
and
get to them.
And how long was that driver sitting there before back on the road?
It was about 45 minutes before I got a hold of a vendor that would do the after-hours repair. And then it was a 90-minute response, and then it was about a 30-minute fix. So he was down 4 hours.
Yeah, and, you know, time is money.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
What's the one thing that most people don't know about being in transportation?
I don't think they understand truly what goes into it.
Yeah.
And even then, I think they're just
you just don't throw stuff in a truck and drive and deliver it?
No. No. And it's so funny because, you know, I talk to friends, excuse me, and, you know, what do? It doesn't make sense. I don't understand. It's real simple. You know, you route things, and granted, we don't really route in this job, but I have before.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's as simple as, you know, a driver is delivering to a small town. He can't go down certain roads. If he does, he can get pulled over because he's not supposed to be on that road.
Yeah.
Or he can get stuck. he can hit a bridge that's too small. There's a lot of variables there that people don't understand. And two, like with trucking and like commercial goods and like shopping, I don't think people really understand, like, if you go to the store looking for a certain item and it's not there, most people get aggravated, but like, we're the reason it gets there. And yeah. I don't think people grasp that concept.
Joe, what about you? What's one thing that people don't really understand about being in transportation?
People think that truck driving is easy. Mm-hmm. People think that the dispatching is an easy job. It's a high stress job. When you're behind the wheel, you got an 80,000 pound rocket that you're in control of and all the lives around you. Constantly having to have your head on a swivel, watching 360 degrees around you. And then when you're doing the dispatch, it's no less stressful because we're still watching these drivers. We get calls almost every night, drivers that are lost, and we're having to reroute them. Yep. Or they're having to reroute because of a traffic accident or road closures. And they rely on us to send them down roads that they can legally go down or safely go down.
Yeah. So,
and you're trying to deal with this call that's active, and you've got other calls that are coming in, and it's just piling up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's stressful. It is really stressful. It's a lot more than just holding onto a steering wheel and pointing the truck down the road and going. There's a lot more to it than that.
So are you able to see where drivers are in real time on a monitor or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Pull them up, watch them drive. We can do like the live track and just watch them, you know, bebop down the road.
So, and so there are times, you know, so talk about something with dispatching or routing that, you know, I know Joe just talked about a little bit, you know, they don't understand, but there are certain roads you all just can't go down.
Yeah.
And every state's different at mm-hmm. times, right?
Yeah. It's,
right.
I've had several drivers at every company I've worked for. Hey, I took a wrong turn and I don't know where I can turn around at. And, yeah. you know, I'm looking miles in front of them as they're going through, you know, switchbacks essentially for the Southeast, and there's no spot to turn around.
Yeah.
It's a tiny county road and you do the best you can in that moment. But I mean, unfortunately they put themselves in that position. And most of the time in those situations, we have to get them out of it,
mm-hmm.
which is fine, but that's a lot of pressure, especially like, in a situation where it is a small county road, there's nowhere to turn around. How far are you going to go before you can turn around?
Yeah.
Can you turn around? Are you going to go 60 miles out of your way before you can get back on a main road? You know, it's challenging at times.
So do you have, like I said, every state's different. I know this because the transportation laws are different in every state.
Mm-hmm.
There are some roads that these trucks can't go on.
Yep.
And so do you have a database or somewhere where you can go and say, yes, you can go down this road, or no, you better not go down that road?
I mean, I Google it most of the time.
Sure.
I don't keep it, right next to me, but I do know locally a few roads that we can't go down, especially towards like kind of Louisville and Monticello, that area.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, typically I just look it up real time. Because nothing's better than real-time updates versus old notes that I've had from the last 10 years.
And Joe, is that sort of the same experience for you? Or?
Yeah, I've got an atlas here at my desk too. Being a driver, I always had an atlas in my truck. That way, if my GPS went down, I had paper that I could go off of. So when a driver calls and they're lost or whatever, I can flip open that atlas and find out where they're at and tell them exactly which roads are off limits.
All right, awesome. So When any of these incidents happen, you all have to document everything,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, these calls,
yeah.
whether it's as simple as taking a wrong turn and having to reroute them to, you know, getting a tire fixed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't document everything.
Sure.
You know, if it's repetitive and it's, you know, nonsense, like bad decisions, yeah, sure. But people make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But as far as documenting goes, I mean, there's not really a ton of stuff, at least for me, every night that, you know, the team has to know about, like, hey, this driver's running late. Obviously I'm going to pass that information down. But, overall, I mean, it, if it's a consistent behavior, I'll make some notes.
So do drivers check in with you when they stop or take breaks or do any of that stuff? Or is that just normal routine?
Some of them, I would say the older guys that's been around for a long time driving, hey, just to let you know, I pulled over for X reason. And then the new guys that are, you know, scared to look the wrong way. But other than that, no. I mean, they just kind of do their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
Yeah. I get a lot of calls from the drivers at night.
Just want somebody know what to talk doing. To.
That might be part of it. Because, I mean, it gets lonely because for 2.5 years I drove nights.
Yeah.
And it gets lonely out there. And that might be part of it. But a lot of them, I really express to them that I want to know what's going on at all times. So if they stop, I mean, if they're stopping for fuel, they don't. If they're getting a little bit tired and they want to pull over and take a 30-minute power nap, they call me and let me know, hey, I can't keep my eyes open. I'm going to pull over and take 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I'll zoom in on the screen, and at about 30 minutes, I start really watching them, making sure that they get going pretty quick. And if they don't, I'll give them a call to find out if they're able to safely continue on, or if we need to start working on a plan to change their appointment time.
I got you. So, and again, that would require reaching out to the customer and saying, hey, we've got a delay. How are customers usually when you call them and give them forewarning? Are they pretty, most of them pretty receptive and understanding, or do you have some, you know, people that are just losing their mind over stuff?
I mean,
or both?
I think
as long as you give them plenty of notice, most of them are really, really good about it.
Yeah.
If their appointment time is, say, 10 a.m. and we call them at 9:45 and say, hey, this guy had a blowout and he's going to be 2 hours late.
Yep.
Yeah. Why didn't you call us earlier?
Yeah. Well, he just had it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It literally just happened. So, yeah.
And but you know, taking care of that as soon as it happens and making sure everybody's informed of what's going on, you're documenting it, you're getting the proper service people out there, letting the customer know.
Yeah.
That's just how you keep your customers happy and you keep the business.
Yeah.
Talk about something your team does differently that reflects Bluegrass's values in action. And I know we've talked a lot about that, you know, just being quick to act when something goes wrong, but, you know, or how it's different here than it might be somewhere else.
Yeah. I think it's a little hard for me because I've only been here, you know, a few months, but I think the teamwork behind it, I think there's a lot to be said there because, you know, there's days where I know when I was training during the day here, it was like, what is going on? But at the end of the day, everything was straightened out. Everybody knew what was going on and all that. So I think the teamwork and communication is really important. And I think we're really good at that. I think our customer service team is really good. They're really good at kind of simmering the situation if a customer is upset for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I do think we're really, really good at that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Joe, what about you?
Yeah, one thing I've experienced is when I run into a situation at night that I can't take care of, I can call Greg and he'll answer the phone 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And gladly help out. Everybody is trying to do the same thing. We're trying to get all these loads down the road and get them delivered on time. And everybody, all the dispatchers there in the office, everybody in management roles, willing to step in and help out when they need to.
Yeah.
Willing to help. It's a family environment there. Yeah. It really is.
You know, we've talked about this on the podcast, and I know you all don't call Greg at 3 a.m. I mean, he knows if that call's coming through that there's something up.
Yeah.
You don't call him at 3 a.m. and go, hey, Greg, everything's great. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you ought to do that once just to see what his reaction is.
Hang up. And
you might quit answering the phone if that's the case.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, but that's good that, you know, you have leadership that understands that, you know, if someone is calling at 3 a.m., something's up and you need to get on top of it. So it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Can you share a story where you turned a potential failure into a customer win?
Man, I don't know that I've really had any.
Give it time. It'll come eventually.
Yeah, I know, I don't think I've had any here yet.
Yeah.
Other than just communicating on breakdowns and stuff and being able to do a new appointment, Tom. Versus, you know, him being late and having to do a work in. But other than that, I haven't had any yet.
That's a win. I mean, you know, communication's always a win in my book. What about you, Joe?
getting creative with routing stuff. We would have a driver that would be held up at a shipper or receiver forever. Our forward account was real finicky. Mm-hmm. Everything had to be on time. And there would be times where we would split a load, drop it somewhere, and have another driver pick it up and relay it to another spot and drop it and pick it up and deliver it to make sure it was on time. And so that load changed hands like four different times.
Wow.
And drivers potentially lost miles, but they knew that it was important that that load get delivered on time. And so they were willing to change their routes. And instead of coming all the way back from Kansas City to Lebanon, Kentucky, they'd come back to Mount Vernon and pick up another load and go back out there right away. Or a driver that calls out last minute, and you have a driver on his weekend that willingly takes the load to make sure that it gets done on time.
And yeah, this is more a question for me, but maybe some of our listeners don't know. Explain what lost miles is.
Joe, I'll let you have that one.
The drivers get paid by how many loaded miles they get. Mm-hmm. So from the shipper to the receiver, say it's 600 miles that they would get paid one way. And then one of our other team members will find them a load to route them to another location. And with our forward account, it was a dedicated account. They did the same run two, sometimes three times a week.
Yeah.
And they would go from Lebanon, Kentucky to Kansas City, Missouri, and then back. And so it's right around 1,250
yeah.
miles
yeah.
round trip. And there'd be times when a driver would get partway back and something would come up and we'd shift loads around and put them on a load that got dropped in Mount Vernon. So instead of coming back the 605 miles, they're only coming back 400 and then going back out there 400. So they
I got you.
In theory, lost about 400 miles.
Okay. That's educating me a little bit, and I'm going to have to correct you. We don't call it Lebanon. It's Lebanon in Kentucky.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's like Pikeville.
Yeah.
You know, so anyhow, hey, you all have been great. Joe, any final comments, any words of wisdom for the folks listening, especially the drivers out there or anybody else?
I've been with Bluegrass 6.5 years. I started as a switcher driver, and I moved up to where I'm at now, and it's been a fun ride the entire time.
That's awesome.
John Higgins, the owner of the company, first time I ever met him, he knew about me. He knew who I was. He knew my background.
That's not surprising. I mean, that's John's that type of person.
He is. And it's that way from the very top all the way down to the bottom. Everybody cares about everybody. And Bluegrass is a great company to work for. I've had a really fun journey with them, and I foresee it going for several more years.
Awesome. Megan, any final words, any comments, any words of wisdom?
I'm going to piggyback off Joe, and this is a really family-oriented company. They do care,
yeah.
And that goes a long way for me personally, and I know it does for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And I think just that alone is whether you're a driver or in management, that's a reason to stay, because they do care about you. They're willing to work with you, work through it. They give you all the support you need. There's no questions asking anything. What you need, we're here.
That's awesome.
It's a great company.
Well, Megan and Joe, thanks for being on Driving for Bluegrass.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Megan and Joe for pulling back the curtain and giving us real insight into the dedication and expertise that powers Bluegrass Dedicated. From their stories of turning potential failures into customer wins to glimpses into their typical nights and their insights that are really invaluable. That wraps up this episode of Driving for Bluegrass. Remember, it takes dedication and great people to deliver excellence in transportation. Until next time, I'm your host, Jim DeCesare.